I'm Kevin Kelly, host for Live and Local, which is on weekdays from 12 to 1. It's your connection to local music and more. And today's show is going to have, well, on one hand, one topic, but on the other hand, that topic covers so many different subtopics and sub-subtopics that we've got plenty to talk about. Bruno Nettle is my guest. He is Emeritus Professor of Musicology at the University of Illinois, and he has a book out called Nettle's Elephant on the History of Ethnomusicology. It came out from University of Illinois Press. And well, we won't necessarily be talking directly about the book. We'll be talking a lot about what went into that book and whatever is on Bruno's mind and has been for many years, which is quite varied. Bruno Nettle on Live and Local. Stay with us. Was a movement from a concerto for sitar and orchestra by Ravi Shankar, featuring Ravi Shankar on the sitar. Oh, I was going to say the guitar. The London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Andre Previn. That was the third movement, called Raga Adana, if I am saying that right, I hope. And that was the first offering here from our guest for today's Live and Local, who is Bruno Nettle. And he's the author of this new book called Nettle's Elephant. And it says here, Bruno, on the back of your new book, that it is an entertaining collection covering your various scholarly interests, ranging all over the place, Native American, Mediterranean, Middle Eastern, and more. But before we even get into any of that, I made sort of reference to Heather Miller's reaction when I said you were going to be on talking about ethnomusicology, and Heather's going to be talking with us here in a little bit on the show, which was one of essentially a blank stare, which suggests the first question I better ask you after saying thanks for coming on the show.
Well,
is what's ethnomusicology?
Pleasure to be with you, let me say first. What's ethnomusicology? People ask this all the time, and of course when one starts books with and articles with this, well, let me give you the answer that I give people, but then let me amplify just a little bit. It's an ology, which means it's not practical music performance, but it's the study of something. It's the study of the world's musics from a comparative perspective. That doesn't mean we compare them all the time, but we look at all of the musics in the world look at each music in the world in the context of a world of musics. And the other thing is that it's the anthropological study of music, the study of music in culture, or as it serves the various cultures of the world. It's also a subdivision of anthropology, and actually, while, as you said, I'm an emeritus professor of musicology, I'm also actually a member of the anthropology department here. Well, that's my definition, but I think almost every ethnomusicologist has his or her own definition of the field, but we all sort of share, I think, certain basic points of view. One of them is that, and that this is one that I have a hard time persuading people the point of view is that somewhere at bottom, all of the world's musics are equally valid, equally good. Each music, you know, and then people will say, well, you mean American Indian music is as good as Mozart, and we don't make these kinds of comparisons. Each culture has the kind of music it needs for its purposes. Now, let me say a word about the title of this book, Nettle's Elephant. It's the book is really about the history of the field. I've been I spent my first 40 years in this profession dealing with the musics of a few cultures, which I've studied in some detail. And now that I'm a very senior citizen, I'm sort of primarily concerned with the history of the field, partly because to do that, I don't have to go out to do field work in foreign countries, and partly because, I'm getting so old that I feel I was sort of there at the beginning.
Somebody could do an ethnomusicological study of you at this point, or an anthropological study.
Who knows? Maybe. Don't give anybody ideas. Why is it called Nettle's Elephant? A strange name for a book. Of course, these days, titles of books often have nothing to do with the subject. There are sort of three reasons. One is, four reasons. One is that I collect little elephants. All my friends know that. But the point is that the elephant is sort of a symbol of memory and history. And second, most ethnomusicologists have their own definitions of the field, and they don't particularly agree. And so they are a little bit like the blind men and the elephant of a legend, where each of these blind men touches the elephant and thinks it is something different. One thinks it's a tree, one thinks it's a knife, and so on. And in a way, ethnomusicologists are like that. That's another reason for this. And then there's Ganesh, the Indian god, who is the patron god of scholars and scholarship and letters, and good-natured and humorous. And so I thought it would be a good personage to include here. That's how it got to be called Nettle's Elephant.
I read somewhere that, I don't know if it was in this book or somewhere on the internet, that somebody, I think, used as a definition for ethnomusicology the study of people making music.
That's certainly a definition I've read, and there are many others. My now long-deceased but good friend, colleague, Alan Merriam, who was one of the most distinguished people in this field, wrote an article in 1977 in which he anthologized all of the definitions of the field that had been made up to that point. It's a fairly long article. 1977. There have been a lot since then. So you can see we're all kind of blind men trying to figure out what this elephant is that we're concerned with.
Well, as you were talking about your elephant collection, I was looking through there's quite a number of pictures of what I presume are your elephants in this book, including a fascinating one on the cover that looks like it's made of bolts and washers, and I can't tell what it is that's making up the trunk. Is that one that's in your collection?
Yes. I have to give a lot of credit for the production of this book to the artists at the University of Illinois Press, particularly Cope Cumpston, who is just now retired as art director. I have a feeling that if anybody buys this book, it will be because of the design, because there are elephants all over it. There's an elephant in the front from my collection, as Kevin, as you pointed out. It's made of nuts and bolts. I bought it at some kind of a tourist shop in Colorado and about 30 years ago, and I have never been able to find others like it. But then all over the book there are these elephants. Very unusual for an academic book to be illustrated this way, but I urge you listeners to have a look at it for that, never mind reading it.
But in any case, buy it one way or another. We're talking with Bruno Nettle here on Live and Local, author of Nettle's Elephant, which is just recently out from the University of Illinois Press. And let's launch into another piece of music. You've brought quite a wide-ranging selection because your own interests in the field of musicology, or maybe it might be better to say your own interest of various musics, is quite wide. And, of course, you suggested we start with this Shankar Concerto for Sitar, and we've got some Indian music coming up next.
Well, I spent some time in the city of Chennai, which used to be called Madras, in South India, studying as much as I could about the classical music of South India. And I had a guide or mentor who was a very distinguished musician and who was also a good friend, now long deceased. But there are recordings of his singing, so I thought you'd be interested in hearing one of his songs. It's a type of song called a kriti in Tamil, and the musician's name is S. Ramanathan. He was actually a visiting professor here about 40 years ago. So I'd be glad if we could hear a little bit of him.
Sure. And kriti is spelled K-R-I-T-I.
Yes.
Right. Here on Live and Local.
Varalam dukum mani nayam jagaradanu suganuni je anuju ganuni je ke anuju ganuni je.
I don't even know if song is the quote-unquote appropriate term for that, but it's called Varalandu, and the singer is identified here simply as, in Indian fashion, Dr. S. Ramanathan. And I'm curious, Bruno Nettle, who's my guest here on Live and Local, why do Indians so often just use an initial for the first name?
Oh, my. Well, this is South Indians, and... You really have just one name. This man's name is Ramanathan, but the initials stand for, well, in this case, S. Ramanathan, for the name of his father, who was Subramanyam, and Ramanathan's brother was named Natarajan. He was also S. Natarajan, S standing for Subramanyam. These are not surnames, but simply the names.
Wow, I opened up a very large topic.
It's a very interesting subject. However, yeah. I should tell you that this was a song in the sense that it was composed. It may have sounded improvised, but actually the central repertory of South Indian classical music is composed songs, and they're quite long and complicated, although there's a lot of repetition and sort of development and variation in it. But they are memorized, and a lot of them are by composers who lived in the 19th century. This one is by a composer named Tyagaraja, who was considered the most famous of them. And South Indians quite often like to say, well, he's like your Beethoven to us. And one reason for that is that they were almost exactly contemporaries. Now, Tyagaraja didn't write down the music. They didn't use a musical notation, but it's passed on and carefully memorized through oral transmission. That's what the kritis are.
The K-R-I-T-I, which you referred to as early.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break here for a moment. Bruno Nettle is my guest here on Live and Local, author of Nettle's Elephant, which is... as wide-ranging as this conversation is likely to be during the course of this hour, at least that was sort of what I was hoping, and I think we're going to get there. This is, of course, our fall pledge drive, and it's the last day of our fall pledge drive here at Illinois Public Media. And the public media part does, of course, suggest that we are listener-supported, and therefore, this time of year, which we only bring... happens, what, 2-3 times, we do ask you to support the station with financial contributions. And here to help us ask you to do that are actually two people. You've probably heard the voice of Heather Miller before. You've heard me reference her blank stare when I mentioned ethnomusicology earlier.
Thank you, Kevin.
And then she said, I can't even pronounce that, whereupon she proceeded to pronounce it perfectly fine. But also somebody who is a fan of the show and encounters... all of our guests at the reception desk because they have to sign in with her, and she ends up talking to them in various capacities, is Connie Ludwig, who is, what are you called?
Customer service.
Customer service what? Just representative?
Customer service.
You are customer service at Illinois Public Media.
I take all the emails that come in and all the phone calls, so you may recognize my voice because if you've ever called the station, I'm the one that you hear.
So don't tick her off because you just never know where she might send your call. No, she wouldn't do that.
You never tick me off.
No. Heather.
Kevin.
We have some business to transact before
yes,
we get
do.
Back to Bruno.
As you mentioned, this is the final day of our fall pledge drive here at WILL, and we're encouraging folks who listen to WILL to do more than just listen, but to support it. We have over $128,000 raised, but we have a very ambitious goal and a very serious goal, and that goal is $175,000 to raise in support of WILL. And we do that one call at a time, one pledge at a time, one web pledge at a time, and we're encouraging you to do that now. I'm here partly out of choice because I chose to pitch this show because I listen to this show every day, and I've made my pledge for this show. Because I love the variety and the perspective from a whole range of musical guests. Bruno made a very interesting point today about the different perspectives in the symbol of the elephant, and I think that could be your symbol, Kevin, for this show. You just never know who your guest is going to be, what form of music they will represent, and I think it's always exciting to tune in and learn something new about music. So I'm encouraging other folks who tune in and who listen to give us a call at 217-244-9455. And Connie's got a special web message. We've already had a web pledge. So,
yes, I do. And they wanted me to tell you to listen to WILL radio all the time because we have a strong relationship with this station. And if you would like to pledge online, you can do that too at willpledge.org. Or like Heather said, you can call 217-244-9455.
All right, thanks. You know, Bruno, you said earlier in offering one of the many, well, several of the many definitions of ethnomusicology, you referred to both musics, plural, which seems to be a term that only ever gets used when talking about world music as opposed to simply talking about music. But you also sort of asked the question, is X music as good as Beethoven or better than or whatever, and suggested that wasn't really relevant. And I was sort of reminded, since my mother is not in our listening area, I can hopefully get away with saying this, but she has sometimes made some comment, disparaging comment, say about Indian music, and says, well, that's not singing. And, you know, that suggests to me that they're singing and then they're singing. And it really depends on, as you said earlier, what's the purpose of the music? Everybody has a music that they need, right?
Well, yes. Well, I think ethnomusicologists try to be egalitarian, as I've already indicated, and relativistic. But on the other hand, we don't compare musics in order to make judgments about them. We may make comparisons for various heuristic purposes. But anyway, there's a fairly famous quote by an Arabic traveler in Europe in the Middle Ages. And I don't remember it exactly, but he said something about the people in Germany, their singing is so terrible, it's worse than the howling of dogs. And so you see, he was probably just as ethnocentric as some Americans and Europeans can be when they listen to non-European music. However, maybe your remark about the matter of musics is relevant here. We tend to think, many people tend to think of music as sort of a universal language, something that everybody enjoys and appreciates. But in a way, it makes more sense to think of the world of music as a group of separate musics, somewhat analogous to languages. And in each case, in order to understand it properly, you have to kind of learn it. So if you, it may be that when you're listening to, I don't know, Indian music, you're enjoying it, but you aren't really understanding it unless you sort of learn a good deal about it, the way you might when you're listening to someone speaking Italian. If you don't know Italian, you say, "Oh, what a beautiful language! I'm enjoying listening to it." But that doesn't mean you understand it. To some extent, is true of music. The analogy has its limitations, but you see what I mean.
Well, and it doesn't even have to be what we would call world music. It can be, you know, in the realm of quote unquote American music. You know, if I want to go see some jazz, say at the Iron Post in Urbana, or any of a number of other places around town, and I want to say to some friend, "Hey, you want to go hear this with me?" And you know, I have one friend in particular who says, "Well," she says, "I don't really want to go hear jazz because that's real jazz and I don't understand it."
Yes. Well,
so therefore she doesn't enjoy it as much.
Sure.
Well, I was just saying kind of the same thing, I guess.
Yes, well, we're surrounded by different musics. I don't know whether this notion of music as a singular and plural noun really works very well. But anyway, that was my purpose in using it.
Yeah. You have some Persian music next, traditional Persian.
Well, I spent some time studying music of Iran. I must tell you, first of all, just in the interest of full disclosure, on India, I'm not an India specialist. I spent time in India learning about music, but it's things that everybody else already knew. So I learned a great deal, but I didn't really do proper research. In Iran, I think I did some research, and they have a system of classical music, their own classical music, which consists of improvisation and composition, but it's all based on a repertory called the Radif. Radif is it's music in a way, in the sense that it sounds like music, but really it's a lot of material that you learn. And once you've learned it, you don't actually perform it, but rather you use it as the basis for improvisation and composition. So when I was there, one thing I did was to go to a teacher who turned out to be a famous man who with whom I became quite friendly and whom I greatly revered. He taught me some parts of this Radif. So I thought you should perhaps hear just a little bit of it.
We're hearing an improvisation on...
No,
or
you're
this
hearing
is it.
The Radif as people memorize it. But, and you know, it is music, but you don't take it and play it directly in a concert. In a concert, you would use this as the basis of improvisation. In jazz, the equivalent or the analog might be a chord sequence or a tune, like, my favorite things as done then later by...
a standard of some kind, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and... So the Radif is the basic material that musicians learn and then use to improvise upon. So if we'll listen to a little bit of Radif, and a little later then we can listen to some music which is improvised and based on it.
On the same Radif?
On the same material.
Okay. Here on Live and Local.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was... How do you spell this, Radivus?
A piece of Radivus. You spell R-A-D-I-F, transliterating into English. It means something like row or standard sequence is a word. But the Radif consists of, you've heard two little pieces from it. It consists of about 300 such pieces. And the main thing you do as a student of this music, I think, is to memorize the Radif. Your teacher teaches it to you one piece at a time. I learned a little part of it, and not very well, but I got sort of a sense of what it's like.
What did you learn it on?
On the setar, which is an instrument, sounds like sitar, but it's really not quite the same thing. It's a lute. Small lute with a long neck and frets, and plucked with your finger with the you have to let your fingernail grow and pluck it like this with one. I'm sorry to our listeners. I'm motioning to Kevin,
right.
Of course you can't see with your forefinger, and the instrument that you just heard on this recording was the setar.
Not the sitar, but...
Sitar. The word literally means three strings. Se is three. It actually has four strings, but never mind.
Sounds like there's a story behind every... Well, I said at the beginning, there are topics and there are subtopics and then there are sub-sub, and that one sounds like a sub-sub-subtopic, but so we won't go towards that one. So what do we have next?
Well, I thought now you should hear a little bit of improvised music from Iran, based on the Radif. Now, it's not based on the same material. I didn't really have that available. But what you'll hear is a bit of improvised music, a type of music called avaz. And, what is characteristic of it is that it's not metric. It doesn't have a meter, although it certainly has certain rhythmic characteristics.
So it doesn't go 1, 2, 3, 4
not
or
1, 2, 3
or anything like
no,
that.
No, that's right. Yeah, it's not. But it's played in this case on the santur, which is the trapezoid-shaped hammered dulcimer. It's the instrument from which the Hungarian cymbalom was derived. And, we could hear a bit of that if we're ready.
We are ready. We're talking with Bruno Nettle here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That's just sort of the vaguest idea of what Bruno was talking about with an improvisation on a Radif, right?
Yes, on a part of the Radif.
A part of the Radif. Yes. And our performer here was Faramarz Paivar. Did I say his name right?
Yes, Faramarz Paivar.
On the santur.
He once performed at the Krannert Center, by the way.
Oh, did he really?
Yes, a long time ago. All of this and my experience in Iran goes far back in the days of the last Shah, late 60s and early 1970s. But these traditions are maintained and do still exist.
Very much so. Well, we're talking about various musics today on Live and Local, rather a wide-ranging conversation, with Bruno Nettle, who is Emeritus Professor of Ethnomusicology and Anthropology at the University of Illinois, and author of a book called Nettle's Elephant, where you can kind of, you know, read about some of what we're talking about, but as Bruno's pointed out, it's really more a history of ethnomusicology with some articles that have been published elsewhere. And he suggested maybe the better reason to get the book is to look at the pictures of the elephants, although I really sort of dispute that that's the real reason to get the book. But in any event, you're listening to the show here on the last day of our fall pledge period, which means it's a pretty important day. We've got a goal of reaching $175,000 by the end of today in listener support for Illinois Public Media. And I have no idea where we are, but maybe Heather Miller has a slight clue.
Well, I know we're over $128,000 so far. So we're doing well. We need to do better. Every dollar that we raise helps support the service that you are accustomed to having in your home. I know I would be just bereft if I turned on my radio tomorrow morning and there was no WILL FM. I can't imagine what it would be like. Hope I never have to find that out. But we've had quite a world tour here, sort of. We've been in India, we've been in Iran with our guest, Bruno Nettle, and you just never know where Live and Local will take you and who you'll interview and what you'll hear. But it's all here for you because you support it and support WILL, and I'd like to encourage you to do that now with your pledge of support, be it $40, $52, $120, whatever fits your budget. Whatever fits your circumstance, make a point today to make that pledge call to 217-244-9455. And Connie has a little bit she'd like to share.
It looks like we have a pledge update in the first half of Live and Local. We've had 3 calls and 2 web pledges. That's awesome. Great. Keep it coming. We want you to support the wide variety of musical guests here on Live and Local. And to do that, all you have to do is call 217-244-9455, or you can go on the web and make your pledge there at willpledge.org.
One last point I'd like to make is that music is a necessity in all our lives, whether it's here in Central Illinois or in India or in Iran. Everywhere around the globe, music plays a vital and necessary role in your life. So support that with your pledge call today to 217-244-9455. And thanks to all the folks who have called in so far.
Well, on that
day, you already pledged.
You pledged, Bruno?
Yes.
Congratulations, and thank you very much. You just needed to make clear about that, right, so we didn't hit you up before you leave today.
If he didn't.
We won't hold him hostage. We've got more people have to come in here at 1 o'clock. But, you know, actually, I'm glad you sort of mentioned that, Heather, music, that we all need music in one way or another. I mean, I can't think of anybody I've ever encountered who doesn't need music in some way or another, whether they quite think of it that way or not. And in a way, our conversation about ethnomusicology and the study of different world musics, as Bruno Nettle set it up at the beginning of the show, is that people essentially need different kinds of music, according to their culture, according to their personality, according to, just their own particular interests. And we're going to go from Iran back to these United States, but in not the usual sort of American music that most of us think about.
Yeah, well, I started when I was a student, and soon after studying Native American music and learning from Native American musicians and others about musical life. And of course, there are a lot of interesting things about this music. But one of the things that's particularly interesting to me and might illustrate some of the kinds of things that a lot of ethnomusicologists do is the system of ideas about music that Native Americans have. I worked with the Blackfoot people in Montana. And from our perspective, you might say that a lot of their songs sound very much alike. I don't know what to make of that. They don't sound all that much alike to them. But the point is that with what seems to be a fairly homogeneous musical repertory, they have a very wide system of ideas about what music does and what it's like. Maybe I can give you a couple examples. One is they have this notion that you can learn a song, or you should learn a song, in one hearing. When they teach songs, they don't teach you one phrase at a time and get you to sing it back until you have it right, but rather they sing the whole song and then you're supposed to sing it back. And that really comes from the notion that songs originally came from supernatural spirits who appeared to, mainly to men, in visions. And these spirits might be animals, and they would teach songs. And they would sing a song to a man, and he would then have to know it. They didn't, if you learned a song from a vision being who was a bear, he wouldn't say, okay, sing it back until you get it right, and I'll sing you the next phrase. Visions were not like that. Visions were one song. So there's this notion of the song being an indivisible thing. And if you change it, it's no longer the same song. The other thing is that the maybe more interesting even to me, they see music as a kind of a reflection of culture. What do they mean by this, and how do I come to this statement? Well, once a man said to me, you know, the right way to do anything is to sing the right song with it. And then he corrected himself, the right Blackfoot way to do anything is to sing the right song with it. And they say that there are songs for everything, for every kind of activity. Now, in fact, there aren't. In other words, they'll say, yes, there's a song for every kind of activity we have. So, well, do you have a song for cooking, for preparing fried bread? Well, actually, no. There are a lot of things to which they don't sing songs. But the principle is everything in life has its song. And there are a lot of myths which somehow seem to illustrate this. So this is one of the interesting things about them. Maybe you'd like to hear a Blackfoot song.
Yeah.
This is a song which you'd hear at a powwow, sort of a social dance song.
And this is actually from a disc by the Black Lodge Singers,
yes,
called Tribute to the Elders, here on Live and Local. Traditional song from the, I was going to say, the Blackfoot Indians. You don't say Blackfeet.
Well,
or do you?
They say Blackfeet. It's a funny thing. Anthropologists tend to say Blackfoot. The government says Blackfeet, and so there it's the Blackfeet Reservation. So it's quite common to say for a person on that reservation to say, I'm a Blackfeet. And we are all Blackfeets.
Blackfeets.
Very logical. Of course, if you are one Blackfeet, then we're all Blackfeet.
I
don't know. I haven't really... I didn't survey people in that town of Browning, Montana for this. But I thought it'd be interesting to see what kinds of things have been done by Native Americans to modernize their music and to make it fuse in some ways with Western or what they call white people's music. There's this group whose singing I like very much called Eulalie. It's three women from different tribes who actually performed here in the Cranert Center lobby about, 6 or 8 years ago, and who compose songs which are essentially in the style of traditional Native American music, but then also arrange them, harmonize them, and so on. And this is a song by them called Mother. Mother.
with a song called Mother, sung here by a group called Ulali, on Live and Local from various American Indian or Native American tribes. And we're talking on the show today with Bruno Nettle of the University of Illinois, Emeritus Professor of Musicology and Anthropology, and the author of Nettle's Elephant, which is a new book out from the University of Illinois Press, which is a history of ethnomusicology. I've heard people stereotype Native American singing as, hi-ya, 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 and this, that. And I've heard a number of Native American songs played on our community station in Champaign called WEFT. Mm-hmm. And I always thought, that really was just somebody's stereotype. And yet, to my ears, it sounds like that's exactly what they're doing a lot of the time. Are they singing words or are they singing what?
In the two songs we've just heard, they were not. They're vocables. In some of their songs, they have words. The Blackfoot people in the Northern Plains have a lot of songs which don't have words, and then some songs in which there are some words and then also vocables filling out. But then in the songs of the Pueblo people in the Southwest, they're mostly words. I think it's worth thinking of this way, they don't have really any melodic instrumental music. This is their melodic music. And so the songs with vocables kind of replace the instrumental music, the music by violin, flute, and so on, that they might otherwise have.
It was sort of surprising, even though you set it up before playing this song, Mother, that it was surprising to suddenly hear the harmony, because you usually don't hear traditional Native music sung with harmony.
That's the fusion with Western music that I was talking about.
Uh-huh. I enjoyed it very much. We have another sort of surprising last song that we're going to get to in just a couple of minutes, because the show is almost over already. This is Live and Local, your connection to local music and more. And it's a show that you can hear every weekday from 12 to 1, and you just never know who's going to be on it. In fact, I'm not entirely sure who's going to be on tomorrow's show. we'll figure that out at some point. But let's get a quick update on our pledge count here. It's the last chance to pledge your support for Live and Local during this fall pledge period. So we do hope you'll make the phone call in the next few minutes to 217-244-9455 or pledge online at willpledge.org. Heather Miller.
That's absolutely correct. Time is winding down, and this has been just the most fun interview. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. But I'm gonna correct what Kevin said. This is, however, the last time to do it during the show. But if you are online later, if you are not where it's convenient now but want to support WILL, and in particular your favorite and mine, Live and Local, you can do so on the web at willpledge.org and put a comment down there about how much you enjoy the variety of topic and interest and musicianship here on Live and Local. willpledge.org or a phone call now to 217-244-9455. We've heard from 6 calls of support for WILL Radio in this hour, and that's terrific.
Our last song from Bruno Nettle is actually, if you look at it, this book, Bruno's Elephant, has a reference to this song. But, I'll just simply ask, how is it that we go from Indian music to Persian or Iranian music to Native American music to a song by Kurt Weill?
Well, it's a happenstance. I played in the orchestra of the first performance of Kurt Weill's opera down in the valley. And someone involved in Kurt Weill asked me to write an article about my experience. And I said, how about if I also try to talk about how would an ethnomusicologist from outside this culture look at Kurt Weill as a phenomenon? And but then I decided to call that article I'm a Stranger Here Myself, partly because I don't know anything about Kurt Weill and partly because that's a song by Kurt Weill. And this essay got taken up in the book. But as a matter of fact, it might have been a pretty good title for this book, too, if we hadn't used Nettle's Elephant, because this is a field in which almost everyone studies a music or musical culture in which he or she is a stranger. And so good theme song to end this show.
I think so. Well, before we play the song, I do need to mention that you are listening to Illinois Public Media, WYL FM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. We have support not only from our listeners, but also from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from noon to 4 in the Bouvon's Tasting Room. More information is at the Corkscrew. And because WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, we do encourage you to call or go online with your financial support for the program. Area 217-244-9455 or willpledge.org. Bruno, thanks very much for joining us on the show.
It's been a pleasure.
And here is Uta Lemper singing Court Files, I'm a Stranger. I'm a Stranger. What is the complete title? I'm a Stranger Here. That's it.
Tell me, is love just a popular suggestion or merely an obsolete art? Forgive me for asking this simple question. I'm unfamiliar with his heart. I am a stranger here myself.